How many of us in the 1990s and 2000s got spam in our email box telling us to send money to this place in Nigeria to help a Nigerian prince get money out of Nigeria and into your bank account? Well, there's a lot more to Nigeria than the Nigerian prince scam, and Nigeria is a country that's trying to fight corruption. Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to my White Collar Crime and Fraud podcast. As always, I'm your host, Gene Tausk, and today is part two of a two-part episode. If you remember, during the last podcast, we talked about a country that ranked very high in the Transparency International Index for very low corruption, namely Iceland. Iceland, by all accounts, is a very good place to do business. It has an excellent legal system, very transparent legal system, and as I said, generally a very good place, very well-rated place to do business. But as we discussed, even in places like Iceland, corruption exists. And we talked about the banking fraud and scandal, which happened in the 2010s. Well, today we're going to take the opposite tack. We're going to look at a country which is ranked very poorly on Transparency International's index, is generally rated as a very poor place to do business, has a very large problem with corruption, very endemic. And yet, we're going to look at some rays of hope in this country that is at least trying somewhat to fight this fraud and corruption. And once again, my usual disclaimer, this podcast is not to insult any country or to make fun of any country. It's simply to point out some issues that exist in pretty much every country, which is that of corruption. And so anyone listening to this podcast, please keep that in mind. The country we're going to talk about is not really a surprise. We're going to talk about Nigeria. Nigeria is a country on the west coast of Africa. Sorry about that. And it's a country with enormous potential behind it. Nigeria became independent in 1960. Before then, it was an English colony of Great Britain. And before that, that area has a lot of history behind it, of various cultures and peoples who lived in what is Nigeria. Nigeria gets its name from the Niger River, which flows into it, which is also where the country of Niger gets its name as well. Nigeria, like many countries in Africa, is the result of colonialism, and the resulting nations that formed as the colonial powers such as Britain, France, and Germany left. Nigeria, as I said, is a country with enormous potential. First of all, some statistics. Nigeria is the 31st largest economy in the world, and it's the largest economy in Africa. Has a very large population of well-educated people. It has enormous natural resources. It's one of the major producers of oil in the world. It has a very high-ranking financial market. And interestingly enough, Nigeria has the third largest, movie production capabilities in the world. It's been given the name Nollywood out of course, Hollywood, and the Indian variant is Bollywood, and the Nigerian variant is Nollywood. It's English is the official language of the country, once again, as a holdover from the days of colonialism. And but the country itself has about 500 languages. It has major ethnic groups such as the Yoruba and Igbo peoples, who have their own languages, cultures, and customs. Interestingly enough as well, Nigeria is almost evenly divided between a Christian population and a Muslim population. The country has not always had a very stable history. As I said, it became independent in 1960. It was ruled by various dictators, military rulers. It has had elections over the past couple decades, however. There's questions as to the fairness of these elections. But by and large, at least for some time anyway, Nigeria has had a functioning democracy. It is the most populous country in Africa. And as I said, the growth rate, the possibility of growth for Nigeria is enormous. It really does have great potential. And unfortunately, that's one of the problems with corruption. It takes potential, it takes the development away from a country and absolutely squanders it. And in addition to oil, Nigeria exports fertilizers and cement. And it also is big in pharmaceutical production as well. And there are a great number of Nigerians who live abroad, and expatriate Nigerians send home remittances. And Nigeria is classified as a lower middle income economy, which is to say it's growing, but it's hampered once again by production, by corruption. But the potential is there for growth. So, and of course, we can get it out of the way right now. I'm sure we've all had our share of the Nigerian prince jokes during the 1990s. And in the 2000s, people would get emails, including myself, from various individuals claiming that they need help in moving their millions from bank account, usually Nigeria, somewhere else. All they needed was the help of a person. And I believe we've talked about this scam in past podcasts. It's commonly known as the Nigerian prince scam. So there we go, Nigeria. As I said, it's a country with great potential, but also great problems. It is ranked 150th in the world in terms of corruption, with one being the least corruption, 180 being the most corruption. So obviously being ranked 150 is a very poor showing. Corruption is very much endemic in Africa itself. Nigeria itself. It's aside from the jokes about Nigeria, one thing that's very clear about it is that Nigeria has issues involving corruption at all levels, governmental levels. By the way, I forgot to mention, Nigeria also has one of the largest militaries on the African continent. And so Nigeria is a major player in the military use of Africa, along with everything else. So we have a country with a lot of potential, but also a lot of problems. How is it that Nigeria can fight this corruption? Well, I don't want to do a podcast. The purpose of this podcast is not simply to talk about corruption in Nigeria. Unfortunately, that is a very serious problem, and we have one podcast or many podcasts about it. As I said at the beginning of this podcast series, the purpose of this is to try and examine, in the case of Iceland, a country that is very highly ranked by Transparency International, but it's not perfect. In terms of Nigeria, it's a country which is very poorly ranked by Transparency International. And Transparency International, as we've discussed, is an agency which is devoted towards fighting fraud and corruption all over the world. Very good organization. But the purpose is to examine Nigeria, take a look at Nigeria, and find some things that Nigerians are doing right. Nigerians are well aware of their reputation as a corrupt place to do business. I've had several Nigerian clients, and we've talked about it. And also the various U.S. government organizations, including the U.S. State Department, warns about corruption in Nigeria. So Nigerians are aware of their country's reputation, and they're putting barriers in place to corruption. That is to say, they're trying to create a more civil society where corruption cannot occur, or if it occurs, there are checks along the way to prevent it from getting out of hand. And this is to Nigeria's credit. It's a country which is facing its problems, it's aware of its problems, and it's attempting to do something about it. But what are ways to fight corruption? Transparency International lists some ways in which corruption can be fought and fought successfully. First of all, one of the most important things is to have high levels of transparency and independent external scrutiny. That is to say that a government agency, in this case, let's take a Nigerian government agency, should have transparency. All of its monetary transactions should be able to be out in the public domain for anybody to inspect them. So if an organization is transparent, hence the name Transparency International, by the way, then its financial dealings are readily available. The correct financial dealings and numbers are readily available to anybody who wants to look at them. And the second part of this is that financial dealings should be able to, an outside agency should be able to look at these these agencies freely without any interference from the government or from the agency itself. So, for example, if an independent accounting firm wanted to take a look at a certain Nigerian or, for that matter, agency of any country, the greater the transparency, the easier it will be for an independent auditing firm to take a look at an agency and make a report on it. Simply because if an agency is doing something correctly, they have nothing to hide, and they're willing to have these third parties take a look at what they're doing. Of course, that just makes sense. Another thing that's important is to have a professional civil service. Civil services such as tax collections, police, the court systems, these should all be professional, and these should be, which means they should be transparent. They should have merit-based hiring and pay that reduces the possibilities of corruption. If a police officer, for example, is getting poorly paid, well, obviously, if somebody comes along and offers him money to look away when a crime is being occurred, it's just common sense that the police officer will look away. So having a professional civil service is something which is critical to fighting corruption. Cooperation. These agencies should cooperate within themselves and with other countries to fight corruption. For example, if one agency is so independent it will not have any oversight from another agency in Nigeria or any other country, then there's no cooperation there either within the country itself or externally. So these things, such as building professional civil service, having agencies cooperate with one another and with other nations, making certain that there's agencies within a government, such as tax agencies, police agencies, have a high level of transparency and independent external scrutiny. All of these are important to fighting corruption. So if these are the steps that are necessary to fight corruption, is Nigeria doing anything about this? Are they moving in the direction that a country would need to go to fight corruption? And by the way, as we talk about this, yes, there's obviously going to be some cynicism involved here. It's quite possible to have the best books on the subject, the best laws on the subject within a country, and if nobody's following them, then it's just simply words on paper. I've used this example before, but it's worth repeating. The Enron Corporation in the United States here in Houston, Texas, had a great series of values and guidelines as to how their company was to be run. It was, and if these guidelines had been followed, Enron would have been a very ethical company that was easily transparent and could have been easily scrutinized by outside independent accounting companies. Of course, it didn't work that way. The Enron was simply had these words on paper and didn't mean anything. And of course, we can probably say the same about Nigeria as well. Nigeria may have words on paper that sound great, but I want to point out something here which is important. Getting words on paper is at the very least the first step in fighting corruption. It's the first step in trying to get something done. So yes, it is possible to look at something cynically and say, well, these words mean nothing. But it is important to get something down on paper because that is certainly, if not the first step, then a vital step in moving forward with some kind of legal system which fights corruption. Now, beginning in the year 2000, Nigeria enacted the Anti-Corruption Act. And the purpose of this act, as it states, was to fight corruption. And the act seeks to prohibit and provide punishment for corrupt practices. And so we're talking about now in 2023. So 23 years this act has been in existence. Some of the offenses that are on this act, which are criminal offenses, accepting gratuities, as we call them bribes in other plain English language, giving or accepting gratuities to agents, giving gratuities to get something carried out. In other words, bribing people to get something done. If a police unit needs to investigate something and the police unit will not investigate a crime unless they're paid, well, that by its very nature is bribe. And according to the Corrupt Practices Act in Nigeria, that is now forbidden. Counseling related to corruption, which I would imagine is giving somebody advice on how to commit corruption. Postal fraud. It is illegal in Nigeria to commit postal fraud. Frustrating an investigation, which I would take the position that means what we would call the obstruction of justice. If in the United States, it's against the law and it's very severe penalties if a person obstructs with an investigation. Bribing of public officers, we talked about that. And there is a duty to report bribery. So if somebody notices that bribery is going on, they have a duty to report it to the proper authorities. And making false or misleading statements, what we would call perjury. All of these are acts that are punishable by the Nigerian criminal codes, and I would imagine civil codes as well. And of course, this is important because this lays the groundwork to having something on paper, the criminal codes, stating that these practices are illegal. And of course, there are various punishments that go hand in hand with this with these type of criminal codes. So the purpose here was to fight corruption. Has it been successful? Well, of course, that's always an argument. Unfortunately, Nigeria, as I talk in 2023, is still ranked very poorly by Transparency International in its list of corruption. It's ranked 150th, as I said. So is this working? You can argue, of course, that, well, if this wasn't in place, maybe Nigeria would be ranked 180th. I don't know. But once again, Nigeria is moving forward with some actions to try and stop corruption, to try and put barriers up to corruption. Another issue here was that the law enforcement in Nigeria has received and is receiving training in how to fight corruption. Now, one of the ways this is done, of course, is through forensic accounting, through accounting, investigative accounting, that sort of thing. In the United States, certainly in my profession, I've worked with a lot of fraud examiners, forensic accountants, and with other professionals who track white-collar crime and help to prosecute or defend against white-collar crime. And I can tell you the most important thing, usually in any type of fraud investigation, is, as they say, follow the money. And that works both ways. It's possible to see something on the record which looks very, very suspicious, but once the money is followed, there's nothing remarkable about it. It's a legal transaction. It works the other way as well. Something may seem to be a legal transaction, but when it's analyzed, it turns out it's an actually illegal transaction. This is why transparency is so important. It's important that these government agencies have the records, allow the records to be exposed and reviewed by independent outside forensic or other accounting firms or by other government agencies. And that is the best way to fight fraud. And once again, Nigeria is at least making these efforts to try and fight fraud in this area, to try and move it forward to get these laws in place. Now, the report from Nigeria also states, and this is very interesting the way they put it, the absence of transparency is the greatest obstacle in the fight against corrupt practices of the public service. And I couldn't have said it better myself. Nigerians themselves realize, at least the fraud agencies in Nigeria themselves realize, that the only way you're going to be able to fight fraud and fight white collar crime in a country like Nigeria or any country is to have transparency. So once again, I want to point out that this is something Nigeria is doing right. They have a problem. They've noticed the problem, and they are taking, at least on paper anyway, corrective measures against it. And interestingly enough, the reports from Nigeria also state that enthroning transparency in Nigeria in our lifetime can only be achieved when Nigerians are ready to be our brother's keeper by giving every officer his due, by treating every officer equally and addressing the twin issues of greed and poverty. Benevolence and tolerance of each other should guide and color our relationships, not greediness, animosity, hatred, and exploitative tendencies. So that's a very interesting way of looking at it. And once again, this is the Nigerians themselves saying this is the best way to fight fight corruption by having transparency, and here's the best way of having transparency. Government alone cannot fight corruption in the public service. It must be seen to be a collective responsibility. We all know our acts of corrupt practices and the prevailing social injustice in society. We can right the wrongs if we make conscious efforts to completely spare a thought for Nigeria, thinking and acting for the common good, reenacting our traditional moral systems. Once again, a very interesting take. And I have to say, I've read a lot of reports on fighting corruption. This is certainly the words from these Nigerian scholars themselves. There's a very, you might almost say, poetic way of talking about this situation. Whether or not you want to talk about the being your brother's keeper, to put it that way, I'd take a phrase from the Bible. But they are correct, in my opinion, when they say fighting corruption is it's a collective responsibility. It doesn't do anybody any good, whether you're talking about Nigeria, America, or any other country in the world for that matter, if you have one agency that fights corruption and 100 other agencies that basically are corrupt. It simply will not work that way. Corruption has to be seen as an evil, which is perhaps evil is too strong a word, but it has to be seen as a sickness that can destroy societies and certainly take away the value of societies. If nothing can get done because society is corrupt, that society, I would have to say, not only has problems, but may not be for long on this earth. So I want to conclude or move on to the last part of this podcast by talking about the Rights and Accountability Project of Nigeria. The Socioeconomic Rights and Accountability Project, and that's the acronym is SERAP, which I think is pretty cool, is a Nigerian nonprofit that seeks to remedy corruption by advocating for improved implementation of policy, legislative, and legal frameworks that dictates how public funds are to be spent and how government should be open and held accountable to the public. And it's interesting that this came about because I guess it's now Big Four accounting firm. God, I'm getting old. It used to be the Big Eight and the Big Seven, the Big Six. I guess the Big Four now. Anyway, PricewaterhouseCoopers warned that corruption could cost Nigeria up to 37% of its gross domestic product, GDP. It's a Sunday. Give me a break. If not addressed. So by 2030, that's 7 years from now, basically more than one third of Nigeria's economy could be wasted because of corruption. And this article speaks with the deputy director, Serap. I'm sorry, sir, I'm going to mangle your name, Kolawole Oluwadare, and what Serap has done. And of course, there's some puffing in this article, which is true of any person who's interviewed for any position they have in a company when they're representing that company. But the author states that SERAP evolved in response to a number of pressing needs to make democracy work for Nigerian people and to make the political class accountable for the management and use of public resources. Remember what I said, Nigeria has tremendous potential. It has tremendous natural resources. It's a great oil producer of the world. It has many metals, which are mined in Nigeria. It also has great agricultural land. It has the largest population in Africa, our country. It has a very well-educated population. And so it has a country with enormous potential. But corruption literally is eating away at the heart of Nigeria. It's eating away at all the potential that's there. And organizations like SERAP are getting these barriers in place to fight this corruption. And the article goes on to state that SERAP obtained a judgment to compel the Minister of Power, I assume that's the Minister of Energy, to compile and make available specific names and details of contractors that collected money for electricity projects but failed to execute them from 1999 to 2018. SERAP also secured a judgment ordering the federal government of Nigeria to disclose and publish names of looters of public funds from whom over $406 million had been recovered from the Buhari administration. That's a former presidential administration. And furthermore, in 2019, the SERAP campaign forced the former Senate president to stop the payment of double pay to him by the Kwara state government. And the Senate president specifically mentioned that he stopped receiving pension from the Kwara state immediately after he heard about SERAP's intervention into the matter. And the author of this article goes on to state that a key lesson from these efforts of SERAP is that the fight against corruption requires determination, doggedness, persistence, and partnership. In particular, partnership with the media contributed to the success of the water project, while a combination of strategies, including campaign, advocacy, and litigation, have helped to force the hands of government to disclose public information and to hold government accountable. Our experiences have shown that working in collaboration with Nigerian people is essential to see that they see and own the struggle for egalitarian and corruption and the corruption-free society in their fight. Well, where have we heard this before? We've heard this from the beginning of this podcast when we talked about what does it take to stop corruption? What does it take to fight corruption? And the most important thing is high levels of transparency and independent external scrutiny. That's exactly what this organization appears to be doing. They're trying to develop a culture or force government agencies to develop a culture where they are transparent and these organizations can be audited by outside agencies. That's not only the first step, but the most important step in fighting corruption. And if these figures, if the accounting is hidden from the general public, obviously it can be very true that nobody knows what's going on. But if an outside agency, independent agency, has the right to audit another agency, that is where any theft of services, any theft of goods, any theft of monies can be found. Another point that the director of SERAP talked about was building a professional civil service. He talks about in this article, he talks about working with the people of Nigeria to ensure that they see their own struggle for an egalitarian and corruption-free society as their fight. And once again, the only way this is done is by building by building institutions that are answerable to what you would say the people that elected them, but to society as a whole. And by building professional civil service, this is the way it's done. So as we move towards the end of this podcast, I'd like to sort of end on a ray of hope, if you want to put it that way. And once again, say that this, although it's, we can look at Nigeria and look at with some justification as a country which is a mess politically and economically, but it is a country which understands its problems, and a country which has at least put into place institutions which are set up to fight corruption and to fight corruption both within Nigeria and especially corruption involving Nigerian institutions. Will this be successful? Well, once again, who knows? But Nigeria does have a few things in its favor, which lead me to believe that perhaps cautiously optimistic is too strong a word, but there is room for some optimism there. For example, Nigeria does have elections, and the question about these elections are, of course, up in the air as to exactly how fair they are. But it is true that Nigeria has elections where leaders leave at the end of their term. And that in and of itself makes it, by its very definition, a fair election if leaders are forced to leave because they've lost the vote of their countrymen. Having a democracy, even an imperfect democracy in place, is a very good step in ensuring that corruption, anti-corruption efforts at least have a leg to stand on. Dictatorships, by their very nature, encourage corruption. We'll talk about that in a later podcast. But democracies, with all their imperfections, are the greatest tools in fighting against corruption. And so the mere fact that Nigeria has had at these elections that have been going on at least for several decades now does mean that there is at least hope as to how this moves forward. So as we end this podcast, what is the lesson of this podcast? Well, I told you from the very beginning, there are no lessons in these podcasts. I'm just doing this as a way to sort of vent my frustrations about the world of finance and fraud and hopefully educate people somewhat. But looking at it this way, this is one thing I've come out of this. I had lunch a couple weeks ago with a colleague of mine from Nigeria. He's a lawyer here in Houston. And I talked to him about this podcast and I asked him point blank, look, are you going to be offended by this? I don't want you to. You're a good friend. And my purpose here is not to offend anybody, especially Nigerians. He told me no, he wouldn't be offended. He thought it was a good public service. So I guess there's that. But he mentioned that, like most Nigerians, he's very proud of his country. The country itself, as I said, became independent in 1960. That's, 63 odd years since it's been independent, and it's been through a lot. But the country has seen remarkable growth, remarkable strides forward. It has several learning institutions of higher learning, which are becoming world class. The country does have enormous potential through its resources, and it has a population that wants to be proud of its country. And he told me, at the very least, it gives another aspect of Nigeria. Oh, and by the way, he has some very good Nigerian prince jokes, which I won't repeat here. But that's the way I look at it. Nigeria has a very amazing future ahead of it, and I'd like to see it achieve that future. So would a lot of other people. So Iceland and Nigeria, two countries that are on the opposite spectrums of fraud. But as in Iceland, not everything is roses. And in Nigeria, not everything is going down the drain. Both countries have a story to tell. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Next podcast, interestingly enough, we're going to be talking about a success story, a country that turned its former poor reputation around and is now on the road, if not to winning the war against fraud and corruption, certainly has made major inroads. I realize this is going to be a two-part podcast, but I've decided to turn it into a three-part podcast because, well, it's my podcast. By the way, the closing music last week was the national anthem of Iceland. We're going to close this week with the national anthem of Nigeria. I think it's only fair. Have a great couple weeks. We'll talk to you later.